Hi, you're back on 90.7 FM with Eric Mann. This is Voices from the Frontlines at 4 o'clock. That was Charlie Parker, courtesy of Maggie LaPique, who's a jazz aficionado, and many of you know her. She's our engineer. Erin, really nice to have you.
Well, it's great to be here, Eric. Thanks for having me.
Sure. So, I think one of the things that I've really appreciated about your writing, you look very young, but hasn't it been almost 10 years that you've been writing for the Weekly?
You know, I've been at the Weekly a little over 8 years, but I've been in the game since 92.
Okay.
So you know how many years is that?
Right.
13
years. Yes. And one of the things that you write about that I think is really interesting is that you write about the black community in a way that's mm-hmm. very progressive, very left, but very introspective, and you're willing to take risks because you can't just write the same basic story every week, you know.
So that's the problem with journalism these days. You keep writing the same thing over and over.
Right. So one of the things that we're going to do here is we are going to talk about the mayor's race, mm-hmm. but we're going to talk about it from a progressive perspective and from a black community perspective. Mm-hmm. So, and when I said before, we're going to tell you, you know, we're not going to advocate who you should vote for, obviously, tomorrow. We want you to think about the election. So I heard that you did a piece, which I should have seen but didn't, on Bernard Park. Is that correct?
Yes. On the Weekly, actually ran a package of profiles,
right.
as they tend to do every election, you know, big election like this. It ran about, 3 weeks ago, in which, all five candidates were profiled. So.
And you did the Parks one?
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about it. Did he talk to you? That's the first thing, is did he talk to you?
Well, you know something, there's a little backstory here. I actually did a story on the Parks campaign back in November, before anybody was actually paying attention to the race. It came to my attention that there were lots of internal problems with Parks' campaign that had to do with Parks' personal style, and there was a high turnover rate in the campaign, and I actually did a story about this. Parks was not pleased, and sort of refused to talk to me after that, which is kind of interesting. Here he is running for mayor, and but he doesn't like what he considers negative press. So, in fact, he came in for candidate interviews the Weekly, as did other candidates, and actually. Made a very favorable impression up until the last few minutes in which he refused to speak to me specifically and said he would talk to the Weekly only if he could choose a reporter. Well, it doesn't quite work that way, but all things worked out, and I did the interview, and he was perfectly civil. He was fine. My take on Parks, and I guess I can be liberal about this because unlike everybody else in Los Angeles, I can't vote for mayor tomorrow. I live in Inglewood, and got my own set of governmental problems there. But,
that's good.
The funny thing about Parks is I think it's I read it in the Bus Riders Union assessment of the candidates. He comes across as thoughtful, as actually having done homework on a lot of things. Not something you quite expect from Parks from his public image. Just, right. You know, very inflexible kind of guy. But he has some sort of intractable character flaws. One of them is, you know, he once he makes up his mind, that's sort of it, and he's not a consensus builder by nature or by disposition, and really honestly feels his way is the best way. Sometimes that's good, sometimes that's not so good.
I had an attorney, a civil rights attorney, who's negotiated with every police chief from. What's that cracker that the guy that started?
Ed Davis?
Yeah, no, the one who started with Rodney King.
Oh, Daryl Gates.
Daryl Gates. Mm-hmm. You know, he's worked with Daryl Gates. He worked with Willie Williams. Mm-hmm. He said he never had a conversation with Bernard Parks because you can't have one with him. He said, like, you go in to negotiate with him and assume you could find this point of unity and then move from this point of unity to this point of disunity and say, mm-hmm. since we agree on this, but we don't. He said, but the conversation didn't work like that. The conversation would be like, you don't understand. I don't want to talk to you.
Right.
You don't understand. I'm not giving you anything.
Right.
And that seems to be, I mean, even to the point of, I don't want you to be the reporter. Forget about it. You know. So
well,
this
he did
is
change,
not...
he did change his mind about that. I'll say that.
All right. Well, that's good. That's good. That's good. Because that is a concern, obviously. I mean, we, in terms of social movements, mm-hmm. want to feel like you can go in and have a conversation with somebody. And, lobby them, quote, but he doesn't seem very lobbyable.
He's not lobbyable, but the disconnect is he doesn't seem all that irrational either. Right. That's, you know, he doesn't really come across as a dictator.
What's his strongest suit? What would you say, if you're going to make the mm-hmm. case to vote for him,
yeah.
what would you say his strongest suit is?
That he really does do his homework and that he actually enjoys little detail, little bureaucratic detail that can make differences in policy. And, you know, I mean, he actually likes those subtleties. He seems to enjoy having those conversations. Interestingly enough, he's not a guy who paints very, you know, in broad strokes. He will talk a long time about why he's come to a decision and why these details matter. He doesn't change his mind about certain things, but he does appreciate, I think, nuance, at least in terms of policy and positions, etc. I mean, you know.
But wasn't he he was there during the Ramparts abuses,
oh, yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
My understanding is that, you tell me, what did he do to take responsibility for the abuse of, you know, the use of false witnesses, mm-hmm. the beating up of people, and then using them against other people, that whole web of police abuse?
Right.
Did you talk to him about that in your interviews?
No, actually, we just stuck mostly to the mayor's race and to city politics. And, you know, it's funny, Bernard Parks, of course, always wanted to be police chief. And you got to be careful what you wish for, because almost as soon as he became chief, or not long after the Rampart scandal broke, and I think what happened there, he just wanted that to go away. The public's position was, this is bad, but, you know, we can take care of it, which is kind of his position on most things. And that's one thing. He was not at all willing to talk about his life as police chief, at least, you know, in talking about the mayor's race. And I can understand that. He wants to create this new identity. But, of course, the irony is, or the reality is, people still say, hey, chief. You know,
and also, isn't he saying into the black community, uh-huh. I was unjustly not rehired
of
by
course.
Jim Hunt. So
of
you
course.
Can't both be the police chief that was unjustly not rehired
right.
and then say, I don't want to talk about what I did as police chief.
And also, ironically, he's sort of trying to reinvent himself as a man of the people, of the community, with the Devin Brown shooting that happened about a month now.
Right.
Of course, everybody's suddenly remembering how... Parks' position on these kinds of shootings in the past had been very, you know, he never met a shooting that he thought was out of policy,
right.
really. But he, to his credit, or whatever we can call it, he went out, you know, it happened in his district, in the 8th district, and he went out and kind of, you know, faced all the hostility out there, and he listened to people, and he ended up saying, you know, actually his response to the shooting was you know, more nuanced than other candidates' responses. You know, he said, well, people are angry. I can understand why they're angry, and we have to listen. And, you know, he didn't really say anything. He didn't exactly take a position. But he tried to, he was sounding very different than he had sounded as police chief on this kind of thing. Now, of course, it looks like he's trying to get some political mileage out of it. And he probably was his motivation. But he was, you know, he still had the wherewithal to go out there and take a position at all. I'm actually surprised he got involved. I mean, it's very dicey because people, he did not get a warm reception out there when he first went out to a community meeting about the shooting. He was, people started to remember what they didn't like about Parks. But, you know, he has been there. But, you know, because of his experience as police chief, it's hard to imagine he would do anything constructive around police reform or anything like that. It's possible. You know, some people think he's genuinely changing, but it might be kind of too little too late.
This is Eric Mann. I'm with Aaron Aubrey Kaplan from the LA Weekly, and we're discussing the different angles on the candidates. Tell us a little bit about this new, interesting United Front that a lot of the black ministers and opinion leaders have tried to do, which is, number one, break with James Hahn,
mm-hmm.
which means break with the ghost of Kenny Hahn, which is a big, big thing.
Right.
And then, interestingly, I think, doing a joint endorsement of Antonio Villaraigosa and Bernard Parks, which I actually thought was a pretty clever tactic. But why don't you tell me, how'd that come about, and what's up with that?
That's a real good question. I actually, you know, I was trying to speak with Bishop Blake, you know, Charles Blake at West Angeles. He was sort of the architect of this coalition. And it actually had a name, which is escaping me right now. But there was some concern. Of course, you could say the most, you know, the black community broke with Han 4 years ago. And now comes the test, you know, who do we stand with now in this next election? Well, I think there was some concern with Blake and some other people that, you know, okay, whatever we do, we should be unified about this. There's been a lot of trouble with black leadership in the city for many years now, and so I think there's some concern about you know, creating some kind of united front. Two, about taking a united position about Han. Clearly, that was going to be an issue. And three, do we really want to endorse Parks? This becomes a crucial issue because Parks is the only African American candidate. But he's an African-American candidate with a lot of baggage. And there were many people who 4 years ago, you know, when Parks was fighting for his job and the many, many black leaders were very supportive of him, there was a contingent that was not comfortable with Parks and did not support him, but just were sort of just stayed silent on the sidelines. So there was some concern about, okay, what position are we going to take about Han? And what are we going to be for versus, you know, what are we against? We all know, everybody knows we're against, you know, Han, but what are we for? So about 40 people, it was an interesting alliance. It was clergy, non-clergy, elected officials, some folks like John Mack.
Of the Urban League.
Came together and, as you say, you know, did sort of a neat trick. They did a dual endorsement of the River Ghost and Parks. Now, what I understand is from people who were around this effort, there was much more support within the group for Villaraigosa. But there were some who were reluctant to, they didn't want to quite snub Parks entirely. Part of it was political. Didn't want to look like they were entirely ignoring Parks. And there were some people within this coalition who liked Parks. So what they did in order to stay together, they did a dual endorsement. But it's interesting. It's a united front, but it's not exactly a united endorsement. And it kind of let them all off the hook in terms of really describing which candidate was better and, you know, was best and why. They just kind of put that forward and said, you know, you can vote for either one. But they never really got into the why Parks or Villaraigosa would be the best candidate. When they announced this endorsement, they just kind of said, we need new leadership. We need new life in the city. We need commitment. These are all slams against Han, but there really wasn't anything specific about, well, you know, how these candidates might change things. And then a week later, there was another endorsement put out by another black group endorsing Han, because there was a contingent. You know, I have to say, it's kind of brave of these folks to do this. It's not a popular position to take. But there was a group of about 40 people who gathered at Second Baptist Church. William Epps, who's a pretty progressive minister, publicly endorsed Han. And the issue at that press conference was, Epps was one of those guys who never was not fond of Parks. And with the Devin Brown shooting, with the whole, you know, resurfacing of the police issue, really wanted to make clear that, one, the black community is not a monolith. You know, we are not all against Han. And, two, you know, Han's been pretty good on police issues, at least in his mind. So there you have it. You have two separate groups, three endorsements, really. You know, there is no unified message, but I have to say, I don't see that as a bad thing. I think that black communities are trying to sort out, you know, where they go from here, who they ally themselves with. You know, it's a big question. And there has been a historical reluctance to go with a Latino candidate. There's been a lot of black-brown tension around, you know, political representation, and that's still working itself out. But I think there has been there's always been support for Antonio, but hadn't quite reached critical mass. And, of course, with that first endorsement, the dual endorsement, that everyone knows Parks will probably not make the runoff. Therefore, that clears the way for them to, you know, give their support to Villaraigosa.
Well, I think it's interesting that if you look at the contrast between what the Strategy Center Bus Riders Union did, we started out by saying, what's our platform?
Mm-hmm.
So we have a candidate sheet where we say, are you for a fare increase?
Yeah.
And are you against a fare increase? Will you protect us against a fare increase? And then Han says, well, not exactly, but I think it's not good because fare increases lead to lower ridership, which is right. Then Antonio Villaraigosa says, well, I couldn't say that for all 8 years in office. We said, Antonio, come on, we didn't say 8 years. I mean, you could say, we think 8 years,
mm-hmm.
but you could say 4, you could say 3. So that's sort of a little evasive, right?
Right, sure.
But then he says, but you know I've been for a 50-cent fare. Right now there's a $1.35 fare.
Right.
And you know I would try to work in the direction of lower fares. So, you know, it's hard getting, but the point is that you lead with a program. Like if you said, if the black community said, what do we want to draw as the lessons here? Do we want a civilian review board? Mm-hmm. Do we want less police? I'm serious about this less police because Bratton has said that the reason that, I'm sorry, what was the young boy's name?
Devin Brown.
Devin Brown, who was killed. Well, it's because the overworked police. Well, come on. I mean, you could have one policeman. I don't think that's the issue. I mm-hmm. think there's still a culture of you could walk away from a kid with a gun. Why were you chasing a 13-year-old in a stolen car? Of all the great, that's part of Bratton's problem about what he calls the broken window theory.
Right.
That you go after all the little things and eventually you get to the big crimes. So after the killing of Devin Brown, they said, well, we're going to once again rethink first car chases and then two shooting into cars. So if the black community had said that would be the issue, then you'd have to get Villaraigosa to take a stronger stand on the police. You'd have to get Park to take a stronger stand. You have to get Hunt to take a stronger stand. Instead, what they do is they say leadership, it's time for new change, it's time for new leadership. So the black community comes out, or the black established church and civil rights leadership, they come out to say, we're players, but players for what?
Right. That's a very good point.
Right. Now, on the other hand, I think what they did was good in this way. Let me tell you, similar to what you're saying about how they danced the dance.
Mm-hmm.
First, it is still a big thing to say, Jimmy Hahn, you're not Kenny Hahn. I'm not saying Kenny Hahn was that great, but that's a whole other story, you know, myths die hard, right?
Right.
But you got 4 years for being Kenny Hahn's son. You're not getting 4 more.
Mm-hmm.
Then secondly, we're not ready yet to endorse a Latino, but co-endorsing a Latino is a big thing for the black community.
Yes, particularly for the black establishment.
Right. For the black establishment to say it's either going to be Bernard Parks or Antonio Villaraigosa is a real coup for Antonio and reflects some of his good work. And I would say, by the way, Anthony Thigpen and Karen Bass and Martin Ludlow's very progressive stand on saying we want the best candidate for the black community and what if a Latino is the best candidate for the black community.
Yeah, right.
That's a big change in LA politics.
It's huge, right.
And then I think it's clever, if I may say, to say, look, it really doesn't matter because only one of them is going to make it into the runoff. So why make enemies? Basically have Parks and Villaraigosa get the dual endorsement. Whoever makes it into the runoff against either Hahn or now it looks like Hertzberg,
mm-hmm.
we hope then that Park throws his votes to Antonio.
Mm-hmm.
Or if he loses, Antonio throws his votes to Parks.
Mm-hmm.
So on the level of tactics, mm-hmm. I think it was brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
On the level of content,
not much
there. It was not much there.
Well, it's like you said.
I'm here, by the way, with Aaron Aubrey Kaplan from the LA Weekly. This is Eric Mann. You're on Voices from the Frontline, 90.7 FM. One more question and go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you started out saying, you know, that there is no platform. And, you know, the Bus Riders Union has a platform. You're absolutely right. Part of the crisis of black leadership in Los Angeles, there is no platform. People, you know, it tends to be reactive. What do black people want out of the next mayor? You haven't heard anything about that at all. I will say, you know, in all the discussions I've heard about the mayor's race, and even on the station yesterday, actually a very good show on Deadline LA, the entire roundtable was all white folks. I mean, you don't have any it's almost like, you know, there's the power class in LA and they have the discussion about what, you know, how they're going to vote. And there's just, you know, there's a lot of discussion about Hertzberg and how he was courting the moderate centrist, quasi-Republican. That's the white vote.
Right, right.
It's so funny to me how it's never expressed that way. That's very ethnic identity politics, okay? But we don't see it that way. That's simply being logical or whatever. But in the whole discussion about the courting of that vote, which is, you know, obviously key to everybody running, you know, everybody's running on that law and order platform. They get, you know, it's coded language for other things. Nobody talks about, you know, courting the white vote. It's a very important thing. There's a reason why Hertzberg is you know, campaigning on the breakup of the district. You know, this is all, it's all aimed at, you know, cultivating a white vote. But we're afraid to kind of talk in those terms when we talk about politics.
Well, this is because the white vote is, you know, somebody, I'm doing this book on called Revolutionary Organizing in the Age of Reaction, which is, I'm going to keep talking about it every week to just make sure I write it. So it's a matter of public record.
Right.
Eventually they're going to say, well, where exactly is that book? But one thing that is not just my idea, but this question of a voting class.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I've been saying is that, you know, everybody keeps saying the new majority, the new majority, that someday Latinos and blacks and Asians will be the new majority. I said, look, white folks are going to vote, like if blacks vote 60%, white folks will vote 99.9%.
Mm-hmm.
They will outvote, even when they're in the minority,
mm-hmm.
they vote like a voting class.
Hmm.
And they have their issues, and their issues are reactionary, as a group,
mm-hmm.
reactionary issues.
Mm-hmm.
Breaking up everything, you know, breaking up too much L.A., you know, let's give the valley, you know, it's the closest thing to secession they can get.
Right.
More police, no concern for social programs.
Mm-hmm.
Then there is the interesting in L.A., though, a white left progressive
mm-hmm.
vote that's larger than normal, generally on the west side more than on the valley.
Mm-hmm.
That has been, as I understand it, moving a lot towards Villahermosa.
Mm-hmm.
But you're absolutely right. The white issue does not get called.
No.
Because it's sort of like the sky is blue and white people are white.
Well, it's kind of incendiary. You start talking like that. People say, oh, you're being racial and you're minimizing the issue. No, I'm not. I'm just calling it like I see it.
Right.
And it's funny because, of course, I think part of what Hertzberg is trying to do is siphon off from the Jewish vote.
Right.
Because when you get down to progressive left, West Side people, I'm a Jewish. So he's been very, I mean, you know, if you've watched how people have campaigned, I mean, that's what he's doing. I'm not even saying there's anything wrong with it. I think we don't honestly talk about tactics and strategy and all that. It's funny, there was one of the debates that happened recently was in Koreatown. And of course, you know, they're all out there pandering for votes, it's just the way it goes, but it was just funny how, one of the first questions that the moderator asked the candidates was, would you call what happened in 1992 a riot?
Rebellion or civil war?
Yeah, this is a very interesting litmus question.
I think so too.
And the question was, you know, are you, what it comes down to, are you going to protect us against the rioting Negroes? I mean,
right.
That's the... And so everybody, of course, oh, right, no question. That was a riot.
And that's what Alarcon said, too?
I believe, yeah. I mean, no one was about to disagree with that because they knew what the question was. But there wasn't an honest discussion about what the questioner was getting at.
Well, you know, in every Hollywood movie, the candidate looks at the Korean woman and says, it was a rebellion because black people had legitimate grievances because of the Rodney King situation. I'm sorry that your store was burned. And then in the movie, the Korean woman goes, oh, you told me the truth. I am moved by this. I never thought about it like that. Even if I don't agree with you, that was such an integrity thing you did. I'm going to vote for you, sir, because I'm unbought and unbossed. I'm Mr. Smith going to Washington. But in reality, they're just panderers. That's in the movie. In the real world, they just pander. Did I say my name is Stephen Bok Choy Hertzberg?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's actually happened.
I mean, speaking of, you know, Korean food, my grandmother always went, she would make a blintzer, and then we'd always have a big, I always had bok choy on my, you know.
Well, no, never far from the bok choy.
Never far. You know, it's like, guys, you know, could somebody please just for once say the same thing, even if you have lousy politics, could you just say it in each ethnic group equally?
Yeah. Well, I think...
Has anybody, besides, like Antonio, when he speaks to us, Antonio really understands the bus versus rail debate. He does.
Mm-hmm.
He knows that the rail system is stealing money from the bus system.
Mm-hmm.
When he's with us, he says, I promise I'm going to protect the bus system. But then he talks about also this red line to the sea, you know, which is... taking the red line from Western Avenue, which is presently our moratorium line,
mm-hmm.
and eventually move it through Fairfax, and I guess, I don't know what, all the way down Wilshire into Santa Monica, which is really important, because I think a lot of Jewish women in Fairfax need to take a train to Santa Monica.
Mm.
for $400 billion. You know what I mean? Like, like they're not going to go anyway. You know, they're going to wait for their son to give them a ride. If they don't like the train, you know, the train is still noisy, it's dirty. I'll tell you, all these people there, they're eating with their food. You know, these are my people. I know they're not going to take the train. So why does Antonio want to train to the Red Sea? You know, that's funny, the Red Sea. So this, a red line.
Sounds biblical,
doesn't
it?
Does it, right?
Yeah.
A red line to the sea. So you've been following, here's my point, you've been following these, if there is one, you've been following these five candidates.
Mm.
Has anybody said anything against form to any audience? Anything educative, anything controversial?
Not to my knowledge. I hear consistently that actually the best spoken, the most prepared candidate tends to be Alarcon.
Yes.
Which, from what I've heard, you know, the debates I've heard, I agree with that. But no surprises, you know, none that I know of. But that's not a surprise, I guess.
All right, pretty sad. Well, I'm on the phone with Aaron, or I'm not on the phone, I'm in the studio with Aaron Aubrey Kaplan from the LA Weekly. Now, we're going to, we've been punditing for about 30, 35 minutes. We're going to now have you call at 818-985-5735. We're going to take a break, 818-985-5735. You're going to speak for about 1 or 2 minutes, and I will cut you off. You're going to tell us who you're for, and you're just going to be a pundit. You don't have to justify it, and we want to get as many calls as we can on the air. And if there's any deadly silences, Aaron and I have a million thoughts that we could fill it with. So a little
bit
more
deadly.
That are just as deadly. Mm. So we're going to have Charlie Parker come back, and we're going to take a short break. And then we'll be back with Aaron Aubrey Kaplan and Eric Mann on Voices from the Frontlines.